there's things that every single person can do in this movement to save a life, and things that are scary, that are terrifying, right? Like to hold a sign up and have the police come up to you and tell you to leave. Even though you're following the law, you have to be courageous. You have to be willing to sacrifice.
Welcome to Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Victor Nieves, as always, joined by Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute. Today, we have an interesting conversation, one that's very near and dear to my heart, and that's how we can impact the next generation.
Yeah, you young people, there's a lot on your shoulders to carry the torch carried by us for many decades. But you know, we are so encouraged and so optimistic about the quality of people that we are passing that baton to for the future. And this program is just another example. I think our listeners are going to be very impressed with not only their passion, but the way they share their message and how effectively they do it.
Yeah, I think that that's right. And, you know, there is a lot of weight on the shoulders of those who it's being passed down to. But I can confidently say, especially with the guests that we're having on today, it's in good hands, I would say. There's some serious fire, some zeal, some passion for saving babies that we'll hear from our guests today. Speaking of which, we're joined by two wonderful, wonderful guests. First of all is Sammy Carroll. She's the education coordinator at Life Choice Women's Clinic. She primarily speaks at churches, schools, youth groups. She gives pro-life presentations accompanied with live ultrasounds, which is very cool. She also plans and hosts pro-life retreats. She creates volunteer opportunities for families to serve together, and she supports youth ministers in the Diocese of Phoenix. We also have with us Mason Deschamps. He's a 24-year-old free climber that climbs the exterior of buildings with one thought in mind, saving the life of an unborn child. As a public activist for 2 years now, he's assumed the nickname Pro-Life Spider-Man for his many feats. Each time he climbs a tower, thousands of dollars are raised for a woman considering an abortion in order to support her pregnancy to term and after. He's also an ambassador for Let Them Live. I want to thank both of you for coming and welcome you to the show.
Sammy and Mason, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to have you both briefly tell us what you do. Sammy, let's start with you.
So I am the education coordinator for Life Choices Women's Clinic here in Phoenix, Arizona. I was a youth minister for 6 years before that, and that definitely helped me reach a lot of churches because I had already been there, done that. And so most of my job is primarily going to parishes, schools, and youth groups, and giving pro-life presentations. And we almost always accompany it with a live ultrasound because we have a mobile clinic and a mobile ultrasound machine. So that's just been a game changer, especially with teens, when I'm telling them about abortion and then able to show them a baby and show them a 12-week-old baby sucking his thumb. So that's been beautiful. I also coordinate retreats and volunteer days, and I have a podcast. Most of my job is public speaking on to teenagers.
Great. Mason?
Yeah, I'm an ambassador for letthemlive.org, and this is a pro-life organization. We try to help women in crisis pregnancy so that they don't need an abortion. But my role there, I guess, is inherently unique because I climb skyscrapers to raise money for these women and also awareness for the pro-life movement just in general.
A very unique approach. Let's get into a little more detail about those climbing experiences that you've had. What inspired you to first climb a building for the pro-life cause?
Yeah, so as far as the climbing goes and how I put those two ideas together, real simple, I stole the idea. There's this guy, his name is Alain Robert. He's known as the French Spider-Man. In my opinion, he's the greatest climber to ever live. Back in the day, he was free soloing, which means climbing without a rope, things that were the hardest routes in the world with a rope. That's how good he was. But he transitioned into building climbing in 1994 and was doing it as, you know, sort of a promotional thing. And eventually he would do it to protest certain causes. In 2008, he had climbed the New York Times building to protest for climate change and hung up all these banners all over the side. And I just thought that was really cool. And it got a lot of attention. And I thought to myself, well, I think I could do that for the pro-life movement. And it would bring a lot of awareness to the issue and just sort of be a different style of protest, if you will.
Different indeed. Why not choose something more down to earth?
Well, I guess that gets into the reason why I'm passionate about the pro-life issue. And I was at home one day scrolling on my phone when I seen this photo of a baby. And this baby, she should have had a bow on her head, but instead she sat in a Ziploc container with a smashed skull and one eye open, literally with the dignity of takeout food. And I'd seen this baby, and I just started reading about this whole issue, like where did she come from, what happened. And she was acquired outside of an abortion clinic. Some friends of mine, they were out front when a medical waste truck pulled up, and they asked the medical waste truck driver, like, hey, could we take one of these boxes? And this guy, he doesn't know where he is. He picks up stuff from plastic surgery clinics, pediatrician's offices. And he's like, why do you want this box? And they told him, well, you were at an abortion clinic, and inside that box are dead babies. We want to give them a proper burial. So the guy said, look, I'm going to look away. Whatever happens, happens. The boxes are there. And they took these boxes home, and there were 115 dead children inside these boxes, five of which were almost 9 months. What ended up happening was they had these babies inside of their house, and they were trying to find a private autopsy to prove that these abortions were done illegally. Someone snitched somewhere along the line. The FBI showed up and framed these people as crazy people with babies in their freezers. And they threw all my friends in solitary confinement. And eventually, we have reason to believe that they disposed of the babies, which is the craziest thing, right? You read about children being sacrificed on the altar in the Old Testament, that being burned as sacrifices. And the crazy thing about our medical waste in Washington, D.C. is that it gets burned for electricity. And because they classify these babies as medical waste, we are literally burning murdered children for electricity, which is the craziest thing. I guess to bring the story around, though, I think we needed a radical approach to this was because what's happening right now in America is the largest Holocaust in human history. That box that they found with these five babies, that is one box, you know, 115 babies, five late-term abortions. That's one box out of thousands that leave abortion clinics every single day all around the country. And people just don't know what's happening. And the climbing is the tool that gets people to pay attention. It gets people to invite me on their podcast. And we sort of get to change the narrative and expose this evil. Honestly, I could care less about the climbing. I don't actually enjoy doing it at all. Like, people think it's like, oh yeah, he's passionate, he's following his dreams. And I'm like, no, I the whole process is terrible. But it gets the attention so that we can share this message and expose the truth.
Have there been other causes that you've been able to help with this technique of climbing buildings?
Yeah, you know, there was one before, and I always wanted to do it for the pro-life movement. But the first building I climbed was to protest the COVID mandates, actually. I was really passionate about it. Right away when COVID happened, I could just tell that this is hysteria and no reason to overreact, guys. I don't know. I have a really good fear rationale, I guess. My grandpa was living in Michigan when all the mandates were being imposed, and he was house locked and he committed suicide. And after that happened, I still was like, okay, I'm going to let things go back to normal. But when they were bringing the mandates back in Nevada, I decided I needed to do something. And it's pretty funny because it didn't get like any news attention because I didn't realize how hard I was going to have to market it myself on the back end. I didn't have a drone pilot. I didn't have photographers. The only footage that's out there is people who are on the ground holding up their phones. And I got maybe like two interviews because of it. But I was glad that I did it because I learned everything that needed to happen on top of the climbing to make sure that, you know, the truth is exposed. And it's a lot more work than people think.
Since you started doing this, how many of the climbs have you completed?
I've climbed 8 skyscrapers so far.
Wow.
Yeah. And honestly, like, most people who aren't climbers, they can't separate technicality from height. And so of these 8 buildings, maybe like 3 or 4 of them are actually challenging climbs. And the rest for me as a climber, you know, they're kind of a cakewalk, right? Like the New York Times building, for instance. After I climbed the Salesforce, I flew to New York and I climbed the New York Times building. And I was trying to make it in a 24-hour window, but I didn't quite pull it off, right? I think it was like 48 some odd hours. I was trying to do a link up, which means two mountains in a day, but two buildings in a day is what I was shooting for. But that climb is a ladder. It's a glorified ladder. And it's so easy that after Alain Robert had climbed it in 2008, some homeless guy was like watching it on a TV somewhere. And he thought to himself, I could do that. And he showed up and he did it. A homeless man climbed this, which is insane, right? Like I don't care if it's a ladder or a set of stairs, if it's 700 feet off the ground and you have no experience with heights, it's going to be terrifying. And somehow he was able to shut it all off and accomplish the climb. But, you know, that's how easy some of them are. But then you get into the more technical climbs, like the Chase Tower in Phoenix. That was a real rock climb. I felt pushed on that. I got about maybe 300 feet off the ground. And I mean, my shoulders were gassed, my knees were gassed. And you're climbing on this textured cement. You're using this technique called stemming. You're pushing your hands and feet against each other, basically using counter pressure to hold yourself up. And as I was doing that, the textured cement under my feet just crumbled, right? Like it has these little like snowflakes that just crumbled under my feet. And I'm only being held up by my shoulders. And I threw my feet back up and I climbed up to my rest. And at that moment, I was like, maybe I should go down, right? But at the base of the climb was one of the babies that I had saved by raising money for her mom. And I thought to myself, like, if this is the outcome of climbing this building, I should really fight for this, because it is in all actuality, life or death, not just for me, but for this child that's in the womb. Every time we climb a skyscraper, we raise money for this woman in crisis pregnancy. And through all the news attention, literally like three or four women will call into our charity and cancel their abortions. So if climbing this building leads to the life of three or four babies, and risking my own life is the least that I can do.
Well, you mentioned Phoenix and New York City. What other cities have you climbed in?
Las Vegas, Salesforce Tower in San Francisco. I climbed the Renaissance Center 400 Tower in Detroit. And then the next one I did was the Devon Tower in Oklahoma City, the Ritz-Carlton in LA, the Chase Tower in Phoenix, a couple more. I've done a lot, more than I can remember.
Yeah. Let's just say you've been around. Yeah.
I've been around. I got a lot of miles on me.
Mason, how old were you when you started climbing? And I'm not talking about climbing out of your crib.
When I was 16, I moved from Michigan to Los Angeles from a little farm town. And I grew up hunting and fishing almost every day. That was my activity that I loved to do. I was always outside. When we moved to LA, I kind of had to find something else to do. So my dad bought me a rope and a harness, and we'd go out on the weekends here and there. But when I turned 18, I said to myself, I need to get out of LA. I couldn't do it, right? Like moving from a tiny little farm town to LA was such a culture shock. I'm like, I have to leave. So the last day of school, I threw everything in my car, skipped my graduation, and I drove up to Yosemite, California. And that was where I really started to rock climb, because Yosemite is just this gauntlet of climbing. You're sitting on this valley floor, and all around you, you have these 3,000 foot rock walls. And not only that, but there's other climbers there that create this culture of competitiveness. So every day you're going out and you're rock climbing. You know, you start to kind of compete with the people around you, and you want to climb harder than them. I tell people that rock climbing is a weird sport. There's a lot of ego involved, and most people who get really good, it is out of this sort of like narcissism that I've had to stop and recognize that, because to get good at climbing, you have to be a slave to it. It's not like riding a bike. You can't take breaks. It's constant training. I mean, every day you have to go out and climb. So I realized like you can be a slave to this thing. But you have to choose, like, do you want to be a slave to climbing, or do you want to be a slave to Christ? Like, what is important to you? And, you know, climbing, at the end of the day, it's a farce. It's a silly activity. There's no reason for us to do it. It's much like bull riding, right? And I enjoy it, but it's not the most important thing in the world.
When you first started, was there a dose of fear that went with it?
Oh, yeah. Like, people think I was born fearless, or they think I'm fearless now. And even now, there's fear involved. I was really scared of heights when I started. And the reason why I wanted to climb so badly and I just went gung-ho with it all was because my dad had taken us climbing with my older brother. I'm an inch taller than him. You know, I'm 5'7", he's 5'6", but he's 200 pounds, all muscle. He played varsity hockey, went on to play college hockey for USC. And there was not a lot of competing going on with him growing up. But when you start climbing, the playing field gets equalized. And so finally, I was able to sort of excel at something and do better than him. And so that was the main reason why I wanted to climb so badly. So I found a way to ignore the fear out of pride and sort of excel at this thing. But even now, like, there's times where you get this rush of adrenaline, which when you're free soloing, you do not want adrenaline. You want to shut your brain off as much as possible and just focus. Like, I want climbing a building to feel like, you know, I'm climbing over pads in the gym. I want it to feel as casual as possible. And when you have all this adrenaline, you have the tendency to overgrip. You have the tendency to climb shaky. You want to avoid that. So at the end of the day, though, sometimes there is no avoiding that. There's times where you're just stuck in this cycle of adrenaline. So what do? Right? You just have to climb scared, and you have to overcome that fear by performance. And that's a lot of times what happens in life. You know, you're going through a rough patch and you just kind of have to fake it until you make it. And the same thing is with climbing. You just have to overcome it by doing.
And you have done it. The way you described your brother, he sounds like a brick wall on skates in the hockey rink.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, you got to remember, like, you're playing college hockey. There's guys who are like 6'4". So it definitely, he became a brick wall to overcome the other brick walls that were out there. But yeah, to my 130 pounds, he's a brick wall.
Oh, I have four brothers, so I can understand what you're talking about. Sammy, let's find out more about what you do.
Sure. I think that I should have gone first because I'm just not going to be nearly as exciting as climbing skyscrapers. But pretty much all my presentations have been in Arizona. We cover most of the state. I've gone up to Flagstaff. See, it's not going to really matter if you don't know Arizona, the map of Arizona, but the farthest I've gone is probably 2.5 hours away. But the Diocese of Phoenix is huge. I primarily go to Catholic schools and parishes. And so there are something like at least a few million Catholics. So I have a pretty good audience, and we are starting to get into Christian schools as well. And so we're focused primarily in Phoenix, but I did make a retreat last summer and we did have teens from three different states show up. So that was really cool.
When you give the presentation, Sammy, would you say generally speaking, students are pretty receptive? What's their reaction like?
So it really depends on where I'm going, because if I'm going to a youth group, those kids, most of them have chosen to be there. Most of them are kind of pre-programmed to be pro-life. But if I'm going into schools, those kids are being forced to listen to my presentation and they get ticked off. So it's been interesting. I definitely have to prepare mentally, emotionally, spiritually a bit different and kind of use different rhetoric for kids at schools, because they definitely get more riled up and defensive, kind of glaring at me.
How old are the kids that you're talking with?
So I've had to give presentations to like 4 and 5 year olds where I'm not even allowed to use the pro-life because there is no other option when you are 4 and 5. But I've also given it to parishes. So I think the age range has pretty much been the full range. But primarily I'm with teenagers and some college kids, which has been so much fun. I love talking to college kids, but primarily high school for me.
How do you present to those kids in high school?
So what I usually do is I say, hey, I want you to know that most pro-choice people, not all of them, we know that, have honorable intentions where they want to defend and protect mom. And we want to do that too. So let's find that common ground with our pro-choice brothers and sisters and kind of approach it that way, where let's talk about the victim. Let's talk about mom. Let's take care of mom. So that's kind of usually how I do that. I have abortion tools, which I got to say just weighs on you to have those in your house. I sometimes warn them. Sometimes I'm like, meh, you're in high school and you think that you can have sex, you can handle this. And so I pull out the, you know, the clamps and the, I have the tube that they suction the babies out. And so, that definitely has brought some tears, but it's very effective, especially when we talk about, I mean, even the abortion pill and the abortion procedures. And then, like I said before, backing it up with a live ultrasound where I'm like, look at this little baby. This baby can legally be aborted. And I'm just trying to build them up and help them with apologetics. It's different. And then when I'm maybe on a college campus, if I start with that, we might not have a great conversation. I kind of need to meet them where they're at and show them that I care about them. Like, I value their life, not just babies' lives. I value their life as well and want to have a conversation with them. And then I can maybe ask them if they want to see you, or usually, do you know what happens in an abortion?
Mason?
I'm very passionate about using the victim imagery because it is what made me want to join the pro-life movement. But in my opinion, until you see what an abortion looks like, it's nothing more than an idea. And so many times I meet these young kids and they're pro-life because their parents are pro-life. And I feel as though reaching them while they're young is very important, and understanding what's happening in this country with the issue of abortion. Because the truth is, right, if we are pro-life, it's for one reason. If abortion's bad, it's for one reason. Like, you hear these pro-choicers all the time. They say, oh, no one wants to have an abortion. And I'm like, if it's bad, it can only be for one reason. And that reason is because abortion is murder. And if we're pro-life, that's what we believe. But not only that, if we're going to say that word, if we're going to say that, you know, abortion's bad because it's murder, then what we're living through right now is the greatest Holocaust in human history. I mean, over 70 million babies murdered right in our backyard. I look at movements like the civil rights movement and like the Holocaust, and people have this understanding of them, I think, because we've used incendiary images. I think, you know, you look at Emmett Till, right? He was a little black boy who was beaten to death because he had whistled at a white girl, apparently. And his mother asked specifically for an open casket so that the world could see. And a newspaper took a photo of it and printed it. And it sort of changed the dynamic of the civil rights movement for the better. And that's what I see with abortion. And yeah, it does turn a lot of people off. A lot of people can't handle blood. But when they see that image, it becomes scarred in their mind like pornography. And a lot of these people, they're going to leave out off for college. They're going to go out into the world and they're going to be heavily influenced by their friends. And the words that we've said are not going to stick because now they have these new words. They're unequally yoked by the world around them. But the one thing that will be locked in their mind forever is the photo of that baby sitting in a Ziploc container like takeout food. They'll never forget that. It will always be scarred in their brain. And I've had times where I've had women come up to us and say, I used to be pro-choice. I've had abortion. But a year ago, I saw your photo that you had on your sign. And now they were at this event working for Students for Life. They switched sides entirely because they saw this photo. And I think it's scary to want to gross people out because it is gross to look at. But the effect of it is like nothing I've ever seen. The way it convicts hearts.
Well, I was going to ask Sammy, you had mentioned earlier bringing out the ultrasound mobile unit. What's kind of the reaction to that? I can imagine it's pretty profound whenever you're telling people these stories and then showing them firsthand a baby in the womb.
Exactly. And that's actually perfect segue, because that is kind of also addressing what Mason just said. But that has been our powerful image. And it's a more hopeful one where, especially with even little kids, it's like they're not going to ever forget that. Hearing the baby's heartbeat. My favorite presentation that we did was for a youth minister for her teens. And I gave my pro-life presentation. I was like, all right, we're going to do an ultrasound. And we kind of, you know, made like, anybody pregnant? Like anybody? And the teens were like, what? And the youth minister was like, okay, it's me. And the kids freaked out. The kids, some of them actually cried. They got to see their youth minister's baby. And now, I mean, they have the continued relationship, right? So they get to literally say to DJ, that's the little boy's name, that I've known you before you were born. And so being able to show teens, especially if it's someone in the community, this baby really just shows them how beautiful life is and how it actually looks like a baby. And oh, look at that baby's hand. And oh, that baby sucking her thumb. And so that has been a game changer. I think it's one thing for me to say, oh, like be pro-life. It's another thing to be like, here is a life. It's definitely one of my favorite parts of the presentation, hearing those gasps. And we had like a little girl come up and she was like, that's my little sister. And like telling her friends that were there, like, that's my little sister, and getting so excited.
I'd like to ask both of you how specifically you're impacting the next generation. Mason?
Yeah, I think more so than, you know, climbing a building. Oftentimes, I don't like the reputation that I've garnered because I've become the guy who climbs buildings. And I think that it's more nuanced than that, because not everybody can climb a building. Like, I encourage people not to. Like, don't. The process is horrible. But there's things that every single person can do in this movement to save a life. And things that are scary, that are terrifying, right? Like to hold a sign up and have the police come up to you and tell you to leave. Even though you're following the law, you have to be courageous. You have to be willing to sacrifice. You know, Samuel Adams once said, it doesn't take a majority to prevail. It takes a small, tireless, and irate minority. And I hope that if anything people can take from me, it's that these babies in the womb are worth sacrificing for. If you believe the words you say, if you call yourself a Christian, what that means is that you have eternal life. So nothing here on this earth is really worth more than following Christ. And what Christ would want us to do is to save these children that are being murdered every day at any cost to ourselves. You read the book of Acts, right? You have the apostles going around the world, you know, spreading their church. And everywhere they went, they were stoned, crucified, beheaded. And they went boldly. Anyways, they knew this was going to happen. And the difference really between, you know, someone who's courageous and someone who's not, because there's plenty of people who do amazing things who don't actually have courage because they know they can pull them off. But a courageous person goes into battle regardless, whether it's win or lose. They do it because they know it's right. And what I really want to see in the church is just this boldness of sacrifice, because we're not going to win this battle unless the church stands up and is willing to sacrifice, is willing to lose temporarily to know that they're going to win in the future. And right now, it's a culture of compromise happening in the church. I mean, you see with these elections all over the country, you have California, New York, Michigan, Ohio, Vermont. They've all passed bills that legalize abortion until the day of birth, right? And these political strategists have decided that the only way we're going to win this is if we compromise. We have to allow exceptions. We have to basically say that we agree with abortion up until this point and not late-term abortion, though. And everyone can agree with that, but that doesn't work. We've seen it. We've lost every election until this point. And even in Nevada, there's the new bill coming that's the same as the other ones, and it's going to legalize abortion until the day of birth. And the strategists have decided to take the same strategy as Ohio, California, Michigan, Vermont, of compromising. And we have to be willing to step out of that box. We have to be willing to say what needs to be said, regardless of whether or not it offends people. And the difference is, we know we're going to lose with the strategy of compromise. We don't know if we're going to win or lose with the strategy of speaking truth. But at the end of the day, we know we will reach hearts and minds. You know, it's a matter of, are we willing to offend and say the things that need to be said?
So that's, in short, that's the message you're taking to America's youth. To be strong, don't compromise, and go for it all.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Sammy, what have you done specifically that will impact the next generation?
My goal is to change the culture. I don't want necessarily just to have someone be like, okay, I'm pro-life now, and then not know what to do with that. I had a teen even go off to college and was like, oh, my roommate's pregnant and she wants to have an abortion. What do I do? And what I want is for her to know what to do. It's one thing to say, I'm pro-life. I want, like, you should keep that baby. If a mom comes up to me and goes, I'm pregnant, it's not going to be enough for me to say, that's a baby, that's a life, because she's going to sit there and think, well, what about my life? And what about all these things that I'm worried about? And so I really am trying to change the culture and teach these kids, one, how to love, how to point people to resources. We have a great place here in the diocese, or I should just say in Phoenix, called Jacob's Hope. And they are a home where they take care of babies that are born addicted to drugs. So when a teen is like, well, what about that mom who's addicted to drugs? That baby's going to be born suffering. And I'm like, well, here's a resource for that. So I want to give teens resources. I want to educate them. I want them to be able to talk about it. Again, it's one thing to know that it's wrong. It's another thing to be able to talk about it and discuss it and being able to say, well, do you know what happens in abortion procedure? Do you know what happens in fetal development? Do you know that 10 and a half weeks the baby has is all of its essential organs, that kind of thing. And so that is really where we're going and just trying to teach teens and really everybody to love them both. We want to make sure that the moms feel seen, known, and loved, and the babies. And that's what I always say to pretty much everyone I talk to. Like, if I had a thesis statement, I was an English major, it would be that the pro-life movement wants everyone to feel seen, known, and loved. And we know that we are all three by God, but we as a Christian people need to do that same for everybody that we encounter. And we are a womb to tomb people. It's not just about the babies, and it's not just when the mom's pregnant, it's after and all the way until they're going to die.
I'd like to ask each of you to recall a specific story where you've had the experience of reaching out and in engaging with somebody in this younger generation and changing their hearts and minds on abortion. Mason?
Like I said, the big thing I do, I speak all over the country at churches and teen events, and I talk about abortion. And, you know, my goal is to get people to believe the words they say, right? We understand why we're pro-life and what that means when we use those words. It's a Holocaust, and we have to live as though it is. If abortion's murder, we need to act like it. And so I think, like, when you show the photos of these babies, you watch gears click in their heads, and they suddenly understand why you're so passionate and why you're so insistive of, you know, doing something about this evil. So I think it's really good to speak to young people specifically, but I think there's an age, right? There's an age that is the best to target and the most efficient, and that's around high school age, high school and early levels of college. After that, you see this hardening of the heart, and those people are really hard to reach. And I actually don't like to direct my messaging towards them because I don't think it's necessary. I think, like I said, it doesn't take a majority to prevail. I think if we want to stop this evil that's happening in the world, we need a small and tireless, irate minority. And so I've switched my messaging towards the church, and it's just getting people of the church to stand up and fight this evil. I think that's all we need.
Do you have any specific account of taking your message and impacting a person, whether it be with the graphic images, somebody specifically that you've shown them to that's changed their mind?
Oh, absolutely. So we go to college campuses quite often, and we'll have a large banner. This is an organization I volunteer for. It's called Survivors of the Abortion Holocaust. And we'll have a large banner with victim imagery on it. And within 2 hours, we'll have 200 protesters there spitting on us, throwing eggs on us. It's quite vile. It's kind of funny because these violent liberals, the first day, they'll be absolutely vile towards us. And then the second day, they'll come back and they'll apologize because they'll be conflicted with their sin. And it comes down to Romans 12. It says, you know, do not repay evil with evil. Feed your enemy, love your enemy. And in doing so, you'll heap hot ashes of coal on their head. And when someone pays you with evil and you repay them with kindness and love, you see these gears click. And so oftentimes when we're spit on or have eggs thrown on us and we're very nice to them in response, you see the next day that they come back and they feel bad. And so you have really good conversations with these people.
Sammy?
So I was thinking about this, and I feel like a lot of times I don't get to have a lot of one-on-one dialogue with the kids after my presentations. And so, especially because there's big groups. So I have more of a positive story about how these kids wanted to be a big impact in the pro-life movement. I had a couple of kids, one in particular, ask if she could call me. And I immediately thought something must be wrong. You know, just like the youth minister in me automatically assumed that I'm going to be helping with the crisis. But instead, she was like, okay, I'm a freshman in college. What do I study to have your job and to work at a pregnancy resource center? And I was like, Nice. Let's go. So I have had a few kids come up to me and basically say, what do I need to study so I can have a career in the pro-life movement? And same with our program that we've had at Life Choices. We've had a teen grow up and now she wants to be, she's studying to be an ultrasound tech. And it's because we showed her that baby. And we've had a couple of girls be like, how can I, like, what do I need to study to be an ultrasound tech so I can show babies to people? So I've really seen as fruits of my labor, I guess, is that there are teenagers that want to rise up and they feel empowered to make a difference, which I'm all for.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, what's the backlash been like when you give these presentations? If any, Sammy, you may have run into a lot of it or maybe not so much. I guess same question to you, Mason.
So I went to a school last year and the kind of backlash that I received is it's from the girls. The boys, they know. It's actually incredible. The boys are usually like, yeah, it's a baby. We're pro-life. You don't need to convince us. Even if they are sexually active, they know and are ready to take that responsibility. It's a wonderful thing to see the guys, these teenage boys, willing to accept that. It's the ladies who are having such a hard time with giving up their bodies and being told what to do. So the backlash that I received was a kind of like, I'm going to just say something, like give you an argument and just try to make you look bad in front of everybody and not even listen to what I like my response. They don't care about my response. They just want to respond. It's just kind of like our social media where it's just like, I can just say whatever the heck I want and then step away and do not have to have a conversation about it. And in that moment, I did just kind of stop her because she tried to make me look bad and then turned to her friends immediately to talk. And I was like, Hey, like I am responding to you. Let's talk basically. And if at some point people get too mad or it just becomes obvious that this is not going to be a conversation, this is just them angry, we just kind of have to take a step back. And I want them to make sure that I, again, see them, know them, love them. And I don't know why she's so angry. So I just try to be loving and merciful and try to call her back to a kind of like a relationship with me. And so I don't think it really worked. I'm going to be totally honest. She definitely, maybe she had an abortion or maybe she has a friend that had an abortion. I don't know. I don't know her story, but she was mad. And so that has definitely been the responses I've seen, the glares, the defensiveness, the don't you tell me what to do with my body. It's really a question about freedom, I think, where they think that freedom means having that choice.
Yeah, with my presentation that I give and with what I do, I'm protected in some way because even if someone completely disagrees with me, at a certain point, they have to admit, okay, that's kind of cool. So a lot of times I don't get bad responses and my speech is so dialed that, you know, I have a really good way of bringing over hearts and minds of young people, especially. But the craziest school I've ever spoke at was a Catholic school in San Francisco. And of all places, so you got to remember how liberal San Francisco is. And I gave this amazing presentation, had awesome footage. I'd shown the babies and real passionate, you know, people are crying. And then they had these anonymous questions and they wanted these young kids to ask older, you know, still young, but older Christian male, any question they wanted. And some kid just wrote on his paper, he called me the N-word with a hard R. And that was probably the craziest response I ever got. But the funny thing about it is the speaker after me was this guy named Walter Hoy. And he is this older Black man, very passionate preacher. And it was kind of ironic that they had used that word. And then Walter Hoy came out and they certainly felt very bad about themselves because they didn't know he was there. You're going to get bad responses with what you do. And you just have to remember that they don't hate you. They hate what you stand for and who you stand for, right? Like Christ said, they're going to hate you because they hated him first. And you have to remember that because I tell people, if I climbed for any other cause, if I climbed for Planned Parenthood, if I climbed to save the whales, I would be retired by now. I'd have so much money flowing in. I wouldn't have to work. But we don't work in this movement because we want to have friends. We don't work in this movement because we want to make money. We work in this movement because we want to save babies. And that's what Christ would want us to do. And so whether we get spit on, whether we get called the N-word, or whether we lose all of our friends or people we thought were our friends, that doesn't matter. We have to fight to the death.
Sammy, a little bit different on topic wise. Tell me more about your retreat.
Yeah, so I realized that an hour in a youth group or a school just was not enough time to cover what we need to cover. So I actually asked the Catholic Community Foundation for a grant, and I received a $20,000 grant to make a pro-life retreat up in the woods. There are woods in Arizona. So we went up to the forest and we had a whole retreat dedicated to the pro-life movement with the kind of umbrella of hope. We call it Hope Retreat. And it is focusing on, oh, no, watch me not remember this. It's 14 to 17. And it's basically know the answer to the reason for your hope, why you have hope, but also do it in a loving and gentle way. And basically, if you suffer for God, cool. And so that was the Bible verse for the retreat. We focused on that. We focused on how that means that you need to have a relationship with God first and foremost before you have a relationship with others. And that relationship with others is really going to be how we change the pro-life movement. And we also spent a little bit of time of talking about, you know, we cover so much suffering, right? We talk about euthanasia and IVF, birth control, abortion, gender. We dived into the transgender movement. It was an intense session, but we dived into all this, basically talking about how we should help other people, the pain of all these other people. And then we took a moment to say, hey, now it's your time to make sure that you have any pain and suffering that you need to give to God and have some healing, because you're not going to be able to be very helpful and bring others to God if you're not good with God. So that is pretty much our retreat. And we end it with a talk about spiritual warfare, because I could talk about that for an hour, but the spiritual warfare in the pro-life movement, as I'm sure you all know, it's an intense battle. And so we try to prepare the kids for that too, especially, I mean, that happens every time you go on a retreat. You go on a retreat and you're like, woo! And then you come home and it's just, you know, reality crashes and it's just like, well, this sucks. And so trying to kind of prepare, we already have that, but on top of it, if you do want to take part in the pro-life movement, just like Mason said, we're going to encounter so much hatred, not to mention the spiritual attacks of maybe doubting yourself, fear, etc. And so, yeah, that's that. We had that retreat last July. We have another one coming up in March. And then, funny story, I was printing out all these things to Staples. I sent all my talks, sent my schedule, all these things to Staples. And I was so scared to pick up my Staples order. I get so scared because I'm just like, these people are going to be looking at me like, ugh, you. And so the first time I picked up my Staples stuff, it was actually a guy with a disability. And he just sat there and just like thanked me for my work, because it was just clear that the message was basically like, people think that I should have been aborted. But so thank you so much for this work. And so I just like took my papers and went back to the car and just had to sit there for a few minutes. And then when I was printing out the retreat stuff, the manager, shout out to Manny at Staples, was like, I want to go on this. And so now I'm making a young adult retreat because the guy at Staples saw my stuff and was like, I want to go on a pro-life retreat. This is really cool. So now I'm making a young adult pro-life retreat, and that's going to happen next month. We're going to do a pro-life job fair too, because I think so many people don't realize that you can actually have a career. And 30 years ago in Arizona, you couldn't have a pro-life career paid. So I've invited OBGYNs, Catholic Charities, some other, you know, all the ones that are of course escaping me right now, but we're going to have tables and we're going to have an opportunity for young adults to see the different pro-life career options.
That's a great idea. I'm really glad you're doing that. Mason and Sammy, I want to give you an opportunity to speak directly to a young person. What is your message to that one individual, Mason?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, they say, oh, I don't know if I'm called to fight for the pro-life cause, but you know, God is shouting from the rooftops to save his children. Every day, there are thousands of babies being murdered a mile from where you live, probably, if you live near a city. And this is something that needs to be stopped. And we can't say we didn't know, because we know this is happening. So we have to do anything and everything to save these children. Because when we die, God is going to ask us, what did you do to save my children? And we're going to have an answer for him. And so, you know, he calls us to love our neighbor as ourself. And you will never meet a parent who wouldn't die for their own children. So we have to be willing to have that same zeal for these children that aren't ours, because they're all children of God and we need to fight for them. The biggest thing I'll say to young people specifically is to never be ashamed. Don't go into a conversation ashamed of your views, because people can see that and they can read that. When I joined this movement, I'd get on an airplane and someone would ask me, oh, what do you do for work? And it was always this awkward conversation. And I was really scared to tell them, because I'm like, oh, I don't feel like being yelled at right now. And what I realized was, when you are afraid to speak out and speak the truth, and you might brush it off and avoid this conversation, it's just like Peter in the garden when he denied Christ, right? Like Peter was in the garden and they asked him, hey, are you with that Jesus guy? And he said no, three times. And he denied Christ. And when we don't speak the truth because we're worried about an awkward conversation, that's what we're doing. We're denying Christ, only it's worse than when Peter did it, because Peter was facing possible death. And when we're doing it, all we're facing is an awkward conversation. So we have to be willing to speak the truth in all circumstances, because how much do you really have to hate somebody to not share the truth with them, right? If you have the secret of eternal life, if you know that Christ is our only way off this earth, and you know the worst thing that's going to happen when you start speaking is this person's going to be mad at you, right? That's the worst thing. And it's going to be awkward for 5 minutes. How much do you have to hate that person to not share the answer to death with them? I guess that's my message, is just be unashamed.
Well said. Well said. Sammy?
First and foremost, you are seen, known, and loved by God. And that person that is ticking you off is also seen, known, and loved by God. And I think that can be very hard to remember, especially when we get passionate about these important topics. And with abortion, I think, and it's not just a bias because this is my career, it's the most important issue, because if we don't recognize and respect life at its weakest and most vulnerable stage, then how can we expect there to be any kind of respect or value for life from there on out, all the way till we die? And I think that we have to, like Mason said, prepare ourselves, prepare our hearts to face persecution and suffering. But we know that we are children of God and that Jesus has already won the battle. So to have courage and, like Mason said, don't be ashamed, but just to remember to love people first.
Well said also. That's a good note to end on. Thank you both very much for your contributions.
Awesome. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
You know, Brad, this has been a very interesting conversation, and it's encouraging to me to see the different methods that young people are pursuing in an effort to reach the youngest generation, because this is something that I've said many times, I feel very strongly about. We have to reach young people. Young people are the ones that are having the abortions. They're the ones who may have not totally made their mind up. And so it's been a blessing to have these conversations and to see the zeal and, you know, to see the passion for saving the unborn.
Well, yeah. And the diversity that they have is demonstrated in today's program. And that's critically important, because we need to have people hitting others with educational information on different fields and in different ways and in different venues. And I have followed Mason's career, shall we say, closely, perhaps because I'm terrified of heights. I know I have to tell myself that when I'm watching those videos, I can't pray for him because he's already safely on the ground. But that just sends a chill up my spine when I watch those. But yes, as you said, passion, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, like you, Brad, I don't think anyone can expect to see me climbing the side of a building. I'll leave that up to Mason. But I want to encourage all of our listeners, make sure you go to lifeissues.org, our website, where you'll find free resources and information that you can share with your friends and family so that you can also make a very important difference and help us save more babies. You might not have to climb a building after all. And one of the ways, of course, that you can help is by joining the Life Defenders today. You can become a daily part of our work to help save babies and, importantly, promote a culture of life across America. Giving monthly in any amount is a tremendous commitment to the pro-life movement. Like I said, you don't have to climb a building, although that's very cool. You can still provide vital pro-life education through your monthly donation, which helps us reach more persuadable people with a pro-life message. And it enables the creation of this very program. So help us do more for the babies by becoming a Life Defender today. Once again, you can easily sign up on our website, lifeissues.org. And as always, be sure to tune in next week for more Straight Talk on Life Issues.